Green shouted for Livingston and Roberts and realized that he was lost. Jim Sandacre had been dropped off at the access control point by the two security officers, and he didn't plan to remain there for long. The men who'd just returned with Kennedy said that Livingston was still alive, but the fumes were pretty strong at the complex. Sandacre looked around for a Refco suit, found one, and started to get into it. Under the Category 1 rules, you needed at least one other person in Refco as backup whenever you put on the suit. Colonel Morris objected to Sandacre re-entering the complex by himself. Given the circumstances, Sandacre thought those rules were total bullshit. He was going to look for Livingston. "I'll go with you," Richard English said, claiming to have been trained to wear the suit. Sandacre had a feeling that English was lying. He couldn't believe this old guy was going to put on a Refco suit. He worried that English would have a heart attack. Doing anything in a Refco was hard work. The whole outfit, with the air pack, weighed almost 60 pounds. The two men had never met, but Sandacre was glad not to be heading into the complex alone. Colonel Jimmy D. Gray had returned to the site after looking for water at a nearby farmhouse. Gray had started the night at the Little Rock command post, drove to 4-7 with food and supplies before the explosion, and stuck around after it. He helped Sandacre and English get into the Refco suits, and Rossborough drove them to the complex in the mobile command post. This time, he wore a gas mask. Sandacre and English rode on the back of the truck, dangling their legs over the taillights. Rossborough dropped them off. The communications system on the complex no longer worked, and the two men wouldn't be able to talk to each other with the headsets inside their helmets. They agreed to signal with their flashlights if one of them got into trouble. They found the hole in the fence and walked through it. From a distance, they looked like astronauts exploring a hostile planet. Jimmy Roberts hadn't seen or heard Green slamming the Dodge Power Wagon into the fence. He'd wandered off, searched through Colonel Morris's battered pickup for a flashlight, failed to find one, and stumbled upon a hole in the fence. Roberts climbed through it and within minutes felt completely lost. A couple of thoughts entered his mind. He didn't want to fall into a hole, and he didn't want that propane tank hissing beside the road to catch on fire and explode. He shouted for Livingston and Green, but got no response. He kept shouting their names, and then he heard someone reply. "Okay, keep on yelling," Roberts said, "and I'll come to your voice." About 20 feet from the access portal, Roberts found David Livingston lying on the ground. His face was bloody, and he had a wound in his abdomen. But Livingston was conscious and alert. Roberts picked him up and started to carry him toward the fence. It wasn't easy to carry someone while breathing through a gas mask. Roberts started to feel dizzy, and his mask clouded up with sweat. At the access control point, Don Green suddenly appeared in a pickup truck. Green got out of the truck, looking distraught, and said that Roberts was missing, that he may have fallen into a deep hole. Green needed a new gas mask. He needed to go back to the complex and find Roberts. The others thought Green was delirious, but he felt like they just didn't understand. His gas mask was clogged. He had to get a new one and find Roberts. Mueller gave Green a shot of Benadryl and persuaded him to sit down for a moment. Walking through the complex, Sandacre felt scared. He'd been told to watch out for the warhead and its high explosives. Debris was scattered everywhere, and in the darkness you couldn't tell what any of it was. The explosion had stripped the concrete off steel rebar, and the rebar had been twisted into all kinds of strange shapes looming out of the smoke. Sandacre had worked at 4-7 many times, but now nothing seemed familiar. The Refco helmet prevented him from calling out for English and Livingston. Within minutes, he was lost. Roberts couldn't carry Livingston anymore and put him on the ground. Livingston pleaded with Roberts not to leave him. "Look, we're going to make it out of here," Roberts said. "I'm going to have to carry you on my back." Roberts carried Livingston on his back for a while, but then had to put him down again, unable to carry him another step. Roberts said that he'd go find help and promised to come right back. "Please, don't leave me," Livingston said. Roberts picked him up again and put him on his back. Sandacre wandered through the complex, looking for the access portal, but couldn't find it. He felt odd being lost in a place that he knew like the back of his hand. Sandacre spotted English about 30 feet away. He was turning his flashlight on and off. That meant trouble. English couldn't walk any farther in the Refco suit. He was exhausted and signaled to Sandacre that he was running out of air. They turned around and tried to find their way out. Roberts feared he was about to pass out. He put Livingston down near the fence and promised to come back for him. He made his way to the battered pickup near the gate and saw two men in the distance wearing Refco suits. He flashed the headlights and honked the horn, but they didn't see him. And then Roberts saw another truck parked nearby. Someone was sitting in the front seat. The door of the truck opened, and a man got out with a flashlight. He was wearing a gas mask and a red bowling shirt. Roberts thought, great. Rossboro and Roberts re-entered the complex, found Livingston, picked him up, and carried him out. They carried him through bushes and around debris. It felt like running an obstacle course in the dark. They got tired and had to put Livingston down. As Sandacre and English took off their Refcos, they saw Rossboro and Roberts about 20 yards away. They ran over to help, carried Livingston to the truck, and gently lowered him into the back. Sandacre rode with his friend, while the others sat in the cab. Livingston asked Sandacre not to tell his mother what had happened. "Please don't tell my mother," he said, again and again. About an hour after the explosion, Colonel Jones and the rest of the disaster response force returned to the access control point. Jones had been listening to Colonel Morris on the radio and suddenly thought, if he sounds okay back there, what am I doing in Damascus? Mueller did the best he could to treat Kennedy in the ambulance. Kennedy was pale and thirsty and having difficulty breathing. Mueller started him on an IV and gave him some medicine to prevent pulmonary edema, an excess of fluid in the lungs that could be caused by oxidizer exposure. Kennedy also had a big hole in his right leg. His long johns reeked of rocket fuel, and Mueller cut them off. Livingston arrived in the back of the pickup, and Mueller examined him there. In some ways, Livingston